Hi, this is Lori, your host of Happiness Hangout, a space to come and elevate your happiness levels. You, me, and our guests will discuss and help you apply happiness to all aspects of your life, even if you're already happy. Get your daily boost of information to help you feel your best. Well, hello, everybody. This is Lori at the Happiness Hangout, a place and space to help you feel your best, and welcome to our show. We're very excited today to be talking with author Cheryl Lynn Sherman, and she's going to be talking about her series of books. We're very excited to hear about them and how her writing has been going and what inspires her. And will lead us to a lot of great questions around happiness, as all of our guests do. So we're very excited here to talk about the ocean depths. And I'd like to introduce Cheryl Sherman to you. And this is her bio coming directly from her. A little bit about Cheryl is that her favorite saying is, find your bliss. She says, that's what I'm doing as I write my ocean depth series. It's fun, like reading one of my favorite novels as it unfolds before me. I want to entertain my intended audience and take them out of their world into the fantasy world I've created. As for me, I enjoy nature, the ocean, my family and friends and animal friends, and discovering new ideas. Educating myself and learning about different spiritual ideas is fun. I enjoy playing my Taylor guitar and Kawaii grand piano. Creating a garden space around my home and being out in nature is part of my bliss. I'm concerned about our planet, her oceans and fresh waterways. Our planet can only take so much pollution, a dumping of chemicals, sonar blasts in our oceans that destroy the internal organs of sea mammals and bombs before we sicken it beyond its ability to heal. Once we poison and abuse it to a point of demise, where will we go? We can't help but impact it, but why destroy it? We have the ability to nurture it and be respectful of it, but will we? Her hope for community is that we work at finding our own bliss and be good to one another and our planet along the way, no matter what belief systems we adhere to or what governments we live under. Is that simplistic? Yes, but oftentimes the simpler an idea is, the easier it is to implement. Life is interesting, hilarious, catastrophic, heartbreaking, heartwarming, and amazing, and I'm glad to have a chance to live and learn. And I hope along the way that my journey may help someone else realize their bliss to the betterment of all. So Cheryl Sherman, welcome to the Happiness Hangout. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Well, that was a beautiful bio. And I'd like to just kind of prep our audience a little bit about your book series, The Ocean Depths. So let me just talk just a little bit about it, and then we'll get into some questions around it and how it fits into your life and the betterment of the world. So The Ocean Depths series, you say, would make a wonderful movie series for your intended audience because it's visually fun. The characters are mermaids, real gods and goddesses who live among us, river and sea nymphs and witches. They're living in La Jolla on the San Diego coast, in coastal rivers and deep in the ocean at King Poseidon's castle as he rules over the world's oceans. Or Mother Gaia Blood, as deity in my story calls it. Callista Ann Saunders. My heroine is a California senior in high school who is saved from Triton, hero, god, merman, and shipshifter. After her car rolls down the bank into the Pacific, Callista is jabbed with toxic venom while in the ocean and freaks when her body slowly changes from human to something else. She eventually learns that Triton isn't just a teenager like herself, but a god and merman. Callista is generationally witch, whose element is the sea and is well-grounded in myth because of her mysterious grandma, Anne Still. Callista finds all that's happening to her and learning who Triton is completely unbelievable and incredulous. Romance, magic, and conflict over how to save the planet because of mankind's continued abuse of its backdrop for all the drama in the series. So that's our book one. So love to talk to you about this book, Cheryl. So tell us about the book. What inspired you to write it, or what would you say just to start off about the book?
I started having dreams about Triton, the god, and I didn't know what to do with that. So I thought, well, I'm going to draw him. So I drew him and I did a watercolor. And then I kept thinking about it, and it kept pressuring me to start this story. And I decided that it would take place on the San Diego coast because that's where I live part-time. And it just seemed like the best place for him. And as a shapeshifter, he lived as a person in an estate in the La Jolla area. And Calista Ann Sunders lives down the beach from him, and she's a surfer. She's a 17-year-old and almost 18. She's going to high school, wants to be a marine biologist. And one night she goes to get her twin brother, Tad. He missed the intramural school bus. He does swimming polo. And so she went to get him and get some pizza. It was March. It was the monsoonal, real heavy rains. And her truck gets pushed off the embankment by another car that's skidding in the water on the road. You know how you kind of hydroplane on that water when the streets have been real oily, and we don't have a lot of rain in California. So it shoves her truck down the embankment, and when her truck rolls and rolls and rolls, it ends up wheels down in the ocean, and these huge waves are crashing over it. And she is worried about that because she knows how to swim, but she's got this embankment right there, and the truck could sink, you know, crash against the embankment. She's trying to get out. She gets stuck, and Triton had a vision of her getting in this accident, so he's there waiting for her, and he dives down as a mermaid, and it's, you know, seeing how the water's going, how the truck's moving, and when she's trying to get out, he frees her so she doesn't drown, and then the truck sinks. And as he takes her under the water and through all this stormy, you know, the huge waves and everything, to his house, he has an entrance below the ground that comes up through the water, and there's these caves under his house. And that's where he saves her, gets her up to the house, and she gets to the hospital, and the adventure begins. And she had no idea that Triton and all these gods and goddesses, King Poseidon, Queen Amphitrite, were real. She thought they were just deities that her grandmother, who is a witch, would call to aid in her rituals. So when she meets him, she doesn't know he's anything but another teenager. But it's pretty strange that he can swim in the water like he does and give her air. But she's kind of out of it, so she doesn't catch on for a while.
Where was her brother during all this? Wasn't he with her, Cheryl?
No, Tad, she was going to get him. She never got to him because her truck was pushed down the bank. So he's still waiting at school for her, and she never does show up.
I see. Oh, my goodness. So she was alone. And, you know, it's funny. I remember studying ancient, like, Greek mythologies and such, but I don't remember a lot of it. So I was looking up quite a bit of these the names before we got to talk today. And what got you interested in mythologies? Has this been since high school, or have you been studying it a long time?
When I had this dream of Triton, it got me back into remembering, you know, all these mythos around the gods and goddesses. And we've had a lot of movies lately that dip into a little bit of mythos, and they're the stars, and they're battling and doing all these things, but they never go and they never give them a personality or a place to live and incorporate them in community. They're always kind of in some place out there on a Greek hill, and you're thinking, why aren't they more in the midst of humanity? So that's what brought me to thinking that I could bring them down to the San Diego coast and show that they have a purpose. So I would look up, whenever I needed a character, I would look up a god or goddess, and I would find out about the mythos behind them, and I would give them a place to live and things to do and a personality. And it's entertaining because here we've got these mythos out there that everybody's studied, but there's not always a lot about each god and goddess. And now I'm giving them more of a well-rounded life something that's kind of out there in the ethereal that kind of drops down inside me. I dream about this. You know, I think about it when I'm working outside. I think about it when I'm writing. And it just continues to grow. And now that the story is, you know, finished, book one's finished and out there, it's like it's got its own heartbeat, its own path. And when I deviate when I'm writing, I just push the delete key and I start again. And when it feels right, I go with it.
Oh, the writing process. Now, with you studying some of the lesser known deities, some of them I hadn't heard of, do you base their life on what you've read and enhance it? Or do you kind of like do with it whatever you want to do to make its life?
Well, some of them are so vague, or they have so many attributes that I have to hone in on a few attributes, or I have to give them more attributes because there's nothing more than their name, you know, and maybe where they came from. So it's kind of a fun, you know, it's an interesting thing that happens. But I try not to worry about it too much. You know, this is fiction, but I want it to be entertaining. And I want these gods and goddesses to be able to interact. That's why I go and try to find them and be somewhat true to what I've learned about them.
Right. And is it hard to humanize gods and monsters from ancient myths?
No, because when I go looking, I have an idea what I want. And that's when I read, and then I go, this is the one right here. This is who I need. Mm. Because there's something about them that calls to me. So no, not really.
I see. And I know you're out there in California, and of course, you live in California part-time, so it must be kind of cool to be in the environment where you're writing. I mean, do you get inspiration, like when you go to the ocean or watch it? Do you get your inspiration from that?
Oh, yeah. I love
it. I'll bet.
It's fun. And it's wonderful when we get the bigger waves and I can go and I take my collie and we wade along in the water and it's a beautiful day. I'm just enthralled with water. I love the ocean. I was born on a full moon and Neptune was my ruling planet. And it's a very watery, those are two very watery planets out there and the moon. They're just, it's a water, those are water signs. So I tend to be really drawn to that. Although I'm an Aries, I was supposed to be born in June. So I was preemie, but I tend to always be called to the water. I'm not called to the fire. To Mars. I'm just the opposite, it seems like.
Now, to tell you something about that, I am exactly the same. I live in Cleveland. So what we've got is Lake Erie, okay? So
yes.
A little different. And I don't live right on Lake Erie. You know, I'm on a southern suburb out of Cleveland, and I am extraordinarily water-focused. I was born on the first day of Cancer, June 22nd. And I have to look at water. I have to be around water. I don't care if I have a little tiny one of those waterfall little things you can buy at, you know, Home Depot or whatever. I don't care. I need to hear it. I need any water around me is so important. I said to my fiance that I'm going to have to get out of here. Like, it's going to have to happen at some point because I can't take it. I have to be in it swimming. I swim every day in the summer. I understand how you feel about that. So it is very nice that, you know, you can go to that and get to that so quickly, and it inspires you so much.
Oh, yes. I agree.
Yeah. Oh, I can really relate to you on that. So obviously you're on the coast and you have a definite environmental tone. I mean, just reading your bio, I'd like to get into the environmental part with you. And I'd love to get into about finding your bliss because, you know, this show is based around happiness. And I thought your book was so cool and that we can, you know, have discussions about it as well as some of these other topics. So let's talk about your environmental focus a little bit more and what you'd have to say about that.
Well, in the book, Mother Gaia, our planet, her lifeblood are the seas. Our blood is salty. The seas are salty. And if we don't take care of our oceans, then our planet won't survive. If we don't take care of our fresh waterways, we'll have nothing to drink. So we really have to be more proactive. Conservation is going on, but there are so many countries still that pollute the waterways, and they're not conscientious of what they're doing to their environment. If we can't drink our water, we won't live. Now, we can reclaim water, but a lot of countries are third world, and they don't have the financial ability to do that or the technology. So as a whole, I think the world needs to be, we've become very small now because we're so well connected technically and through media, and we really do need to take care of this planet as a group. It's very, very important because we, as humanity, are having more children, and our children are having children, and their children are having children, and we're running out of spaces to live. And if we don't learn how to take care of what we have, it's like a home. If you don't take care of your home, it'll fall down around your ears. Then, well, where will you live, you know? It's something we as humanity have to start focusing on and stop saying, well, you're a tree hugger, and that doesn't make sense to me. No, it's our planet. It's our home, and we have to take care of it.
Well, that's so true, and I'm thinking about, you know, we have some beautiful parks here. We have the Cuyahoga Valley National Park, as well as the Cuyahoga Cleveland Park system. And luckily, I have a very close friend who is a park ranger, and she's done several other things in the park. And so we spend a lot of time down there. And I didn't grow up with that mindset so much. And I guess, you know, being friends with someone kind of opens your mind to that. And, you know, I would encourage all people, if wherever you live, to go and visit and be part of, you know, whatever nature that you have. Like, you know, you have wonderful things on the coast, and we have wonderful things too. So I try to take advantage of those things in terms of learning about them and being around them. So, you know, that's always a really good thing to do. And a lot of these natural resources, like you said, because of the salt and how connected we are to nature, that we're part of it, and that it also is connected to happiness and makes us feel better. You know, quite frankly, I go and I take walks, and I make particular notice to flowers. I love them, to trees, to the sky when I walk my dog. And I try to notice different things all the time. Well, that actually brings your happiness level up for lots of scientific reasons. So, you know, we're just so connected to it.
Yes. Yes. I agree.
Yeah. I mean, I constantly, you know, the nature of the water for me is, like I said, I swim for exercise, but I'll notice in my swimming that I'll be paying attention to the waves and the sunlight hitting the water in the pool. And, you know, I haven't been to the beach in a long time, which is where I have to be. And we just planned our honeymoon. And I said, you know, I got to do it again. I can't get off these beach vacations, but it's really about the sand, the smell, all your senses, being in the water. I can't get away from it personally. So, hey, I guess you do what you love to do, and you should.
You should. Yes. Life is short.
Yeah. So it's not just good for the environment, but it's good for us too. And I, you know, think if just everybody's just a little bit more conscientious of it, we'd be in a much better place.
Yes, we would. And I think that we as humanity hide ourselves in our homes, and then we live in suburbia, or we live in a city and there's cement and there's asphalt, and we forget that nature is where all of us stemmed from. Everything came from a planet becoming habitable. So if we don't connect with the planet and we keep hiding away from it in our homes and ignoring it and letting it have problems because of our pollution, our need to find more energy, our inability to find ways to make products that aren't petroleum-based, we're going to suffer because you can only do damage for so long. And, you know, basically all of us want to be happy. We want to have a good place to live. We want to have nice people to live with. We want to have a good way to make a living, and we want to thrive. So I think we need to be more conscientious how to help each of us thrive, and that includes our planet.
Well, you know, it's interesting because to our listeners who live in a place that has seasons, I live in a place that has seasons. And when the winter comes, you talk about being in suburbia or being locked down. You know, we love the snow in December. All of us around here love it. It's so pretty, you know, and then we handle it all the way through the new year because everyone's, well, most people are real happy around the holidays. I understand not everybody is, but many are with parties and such. And then here we go. I will tell you, living here and understanding the four seasons, we had the mildest winter, one of the mildest winters in history last year. And Cheryl, people, we couldn't believe it. We had our Christmas party, have a neighborhood party outside. I call it the bistro. People who listen to my show know I call it the bistro. It's just my little area outside of my condo that I do up. I just love it. And it was 70 degrees in the evening. We were all in open toe shoes, sitting out. We pulled everything out, dusted it off on like December 17th. And it was the mildest winter ever. And people by the beginning of March are still crabby. I mean, I cannot explain to you in words the crabbiness. And when it's a bad winter, it's even way worse. So people are crabby and they're on lockdown. So it's even a little, you know, you really have to help people try to help people find ways. I have a lot of set of things I talk to people about through my writing and my show and my website, et cetera, to how to work through this. Because like I said, you're just hunkered down. So it's a little tougher for us, you know, in these places in the world, I'll tell you. And I know where you live, is probably not quite that way.
Well, I also live in Arizona because Arizona is my residence. And where mm-hmm. I live there, I'm up at almost 6,000 feet and we have snow. We have 2 degrees outside. I mean, we have a winter, and it starts at the end of October and usually goes through the first week in May where it'll freeze at night. So I understand seasons. It's a little different there because summertime isn't nice. There we have rain. It's been raining almost every day for like 2 months. Oh, really wow. Bad rain with thunder and lightning and stuff. But just I have to go out every day and feed my horses and take care of the livestock. We have longhorn cattle. And I have to go out and be in that. So I just dress appropriately and I'm out there and it's good for me. I pick the apples in the summertime when it's raining and I do all of my brushing the horses and leading them out to pasture and, you know, bringing them back in at night. But I do all that work every day I'm outside. So I've learned in whatever state the weather is, dress for it and go be in it and accept it because it'll have its own delight. And yeah, sometimes it's a little scary when the lightning is, you know, cutting through the sky and you're hearing the booms of thunder. You're like, oh, time to duck. But, you know, I got a job to do. So I go out there and do it. And I feel better when I'm out there doing my stuff. So I'm glad I have my animal friends to take care of. They're glad, too. They like to see me because I feed them good food.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and you're right about that. You have to find whatever position you're in, if weather really affects you, and most people it does to some level, you have to find what you love to do, whatever season you're in. And if that means finding things to do inside, I said to my fiance, we're going to play badminton outside. I don't care if it's snowing. We're going to do it. No, it didn't happen. it just did not happen. I'm trying to find a winter sport for exercise and something that I love. And I have a few other things I only do during the winter that I look forward to that are indoor things. And I always say to him, let's not do that now. That's a winter thing. Do you really want to do that now? He's like, nah, let's go outside, you know? So we do figure that out, but it's important, I think, for people's mental health to also, you know, be very aware to do that for themselves. So before we get to your finding your bliss, I do want to go back to the book here, Ocean's Depths. And Ocean's Depths of Darkness have won several awards. And I see here Mom's Choice Award. So it's obviously a family-friendly story. Did you intend for that to happen? Or who is your audience? And what do you think about what your audience has actually turned into?
The book was intended for 14 years of age through the age 50 of women, and it's a love story. Calista, a coming of age for her, and a change of species, sort of, And it's entertaining, and there's always something going on. Each chapter has something else going on, something she's discovering. Because when you have a fantasy fiction, you have fantasy. And she is a well-grounded, balanced young woman that has a goal of being a marine biologist. And all of a sudden, she's finding this world of mythological gods and goddesses, and they are real. And it's changing her whole view of life. And so she would be like one of us, finding out that the gods and goddesses were real. Now, she knows that her Grandma Annie's a witch. She's gone to her Grandma Annie's coven rituals and enjoyed them and been a part of that. But she's mostly been going to school and having her friends and pursuing her dreams, and hasn't given a lot of thought to the mythos in the world. But now, all of a sudden, she's questioning, my goodness, are fairies real? Is Hades real? If there's a Triton and a Poseidon and an Amphitrite and a Palamon, are these other deities that we've read about, are they real? So all of this is kind of dropped down into her life. And the book just continuously, she's continuously discovering new things about this whole group of others. I call them others that aren't humans, that she had no idea existed. So it takes you from one step to another, to another, to another, and you're kind of like, oh no, wow, really? Oh my goodness. And that's how I wanted the book to go. And then at the end, it's a cliffhanger. And you're like, no, it's the last page. Yep, it's the last page. And book two is almost ready for publication. And each book will be a cliffhanger into the next one. So that I have my audience going, oh, I got to get the next book. Because
of course, yeah.
It's like a phone book. I told one of my media friends, it's a phone book. And I cut it off at a certain alphabet number. Like maybe I cut off Ocean Depths of Darkness at the D. And now you've got to go read E, F, G, H, you know, and keep going. But he didn't understand that. He's like, it doesn't just end. I said, no. I had to make it a certain page number, so I had to end it. But the story's not over.
Wow. And so obviously, if it's a Mom's Choice Award, the younger side of that whole group must have resonated with it a lot.
Yeah, and I didn't intend. I just did good writing. I wanted to entertain, and I knew my audience. I knew what they would like. And I didn't write it to get an award. I just wanted to write it well and make my audience enjoy themselves. I wanted them to find their bliss when they picked up that book. I wanted them to sit down and go, wow, and just keep reading and reading and reading because they couldn't put it down. Because that's the way I feel about it. And you know how many times I've gone through it. And I'm still reading it when I have to research something for the next book and I've forgotten something. I go back and I read a chapter and go, oh, yeah, okay, I got that. And I
see.
It.
Well, yeah. And you know, when you read something twice, you have a different perspective on it the next time. So I'm interested in why you cut the cutoff at women at 50. Is there like a certain reason for that? Or is that just something you thought that's a good kind of way to end it?
Oh, that isn't me. They say, whoever they are, say that the young adult audience is age 14 to the age 50. Now, I think that's hilarious because I have a lady that was 85 read it and she loved it. Her only complaint? The font is too small.
Of course. Got to get her magnifying glass out.
Yeah, and I've had a couple other ladies that were in their 70s and one that was in their 60s, and they loved it and can't wait until I get book two out. Yeah, book two will be out January of 2017.
Oh, that's great news. Well, that just sounds exciting. And you're right. There's nothing like a book like that that you can't put down. And it just takes you into another place. Even if you love your life, there's something about that feeling of, there's something about having that feeling of not being able to put it down that you can't wait to get back to it. That's just very special. And I'm a reader, of course, and I know people who aren't. And I thought, oh, you should really try, because when you find the right book, they don't always come along either. I mean, I'm in a book club. I tried it. I'm writing to my first book, which I just wrote my first chapter. I'm having a heart attack, of course. my editor's in it right now. But, you know, there are books you don't love and you sort of force yourself through. But I said, I got to be in this book club and I've got to do it. So yeah, it all meshes together with finding your bliss. But you know, when you talk about the audience and you talk about the story, what about the love part of it? You know, you say that there's a love story at the center of it. How was that to deal with and add a love story into all this? What was that like for you?
Well, it was very natural. I wanted a hero and a heroine. And Calista Ann Sunders is the heroine. And I thought about who her parents are. I've got her generations going back 8 generations, 9 generations. I've written it all out. She has a genealogy. Triton has a genealogy. I really wanted to feel like they were real. And if you don't make your book personal, my book isn't about the environment. It isn't about the San Diego coast. It's about finding your bliss. And Triton is trying to find his bliss. Calista is trying to find her bliss. And together, they're going to find their bliss. But it ebbs and flows like life does. And they have to understand each other, discover each other, get to like each other, get over arguments with each other, just like real people. And that's what I've done in this story. And so it really is a love story with all this drama swirling around it, all the conflict between the gods and goddesses. And it's entertaining because I wanted it to pull at the heartstrings of females. So many of our books that are fantasy fiction now are battles and bloodletting and depressing. And you pick them up and you read them, and it's like you have to force yourself to turn the next page. It's gruesome. And I thought, I want something that's extremely entertaining, and there'll have to be conflict, and there'll have to be drama, but I want the person reading it to feel good when they go away from it, and not to just go, oh, I got to pick up this book and read it because I bought it. So that takes a particular type of writing, and I want it to be uplifting, and the story is very uplifting, because even in the middle of some of the hardest themes, I put humor in it. I put enlightenment in it. There'll be a, you know, the light bulb goes on inside a person's head, and she gets it, you know. And that's what I tried to write for, is an uplifting, you know, feeling as I'm going along, no matter what is happening in the story.
I see. And in terms of love stories, have there been other love stories out there that influenced you, or that you thought about when you wrote the love story in this book?
Lots of love stories. They're always in it. Like, even in Tolkien's story, there's love in that story. It's not always romantic love, but it's love. There's love between different individuals as friends, as comrades, as family. And J.K. Rowling, there was love in that story. You had friends that loved each other, stood by each other, helped each other. And then C.S. Lewis, he had love in his story. You just see it between the siblings and the lion. Even E.L. James, Shades of Grey. I don't care what people say about that book. Even though it's got all the stuff around it, there's still a love story in that. And I like her writing. She's a good writer. She knows how to take a difficult topic and write. And Lewis Carroll, Alice in Wonderland, there's even stuff in there that I go, you know, there's love going on right there. There's help. There's companionship.
mm-hmm.
You know, Stephanie Myers, the Twilight series, that's a mm-hmm. love story. There's so many books that have degrees of love, different types of love. There's, you know, family love, there's brother-sister love, there's friend love, there's loving an animal, your companion. The books about Lassie, you know, or the shows about Lassie. You know, all these are, you know, variations of love. And I think humanity and even our animal friends, they all want love. I have a parrot at home. He's an African gray. And he said probably about 1,100 words. He knows how to use them as tools. When he wants fruit, he says, come here and give me yummy juice food. He can speak like a toddler. He knows, and at 8 o'clock at night, a few minutes before he starts yelling in the house, it's time to go naughty light. Where are you? Come here. And it's always in my voice, because I taught him how to talk.
And oh, my gosh.
He knows what his feet are and his feet. But he knows what he wants, and he'll tell me, he'll say, come here, give me a kiss. Kiss feathers. And he'll put his little beak through the cage, and I'll touch my nose on his beak, and I'll say, kiss beak, and he likes that. You know, before he goes to bed, he wants to give a kiss, and then he says real soft, it's time to go night-night. So I tell him, turn out the lights, turn off the heat, or turn on the heat for him, and put him to bed. But he himself wants love, too, because every once in a while he'll call me and he'll go, Cher, come here, kiss beak, come here, because he wants that attention. So, you know, you can see it in your dog. They'll smile at you. Dogs smile. They put their little ears down, and their face looks different. You can see their eyes are happy, and their tails are wagging. It's a smile. And they know when we smile. They can see it on our faces. Even the horses, they know. I call them, and they come running because I give them a treat, and they're happy and relaxed. They like companionship with the other horses. It makes them feel sad when they're alone because they're a herd animal. Everybody wants love. That's what this book is about. It's about love, because there's love everywhere up there. Look for it. And that gives us happiness, right?
Right. Well, yeah, and you know, you just made me laugh, because I was just talking just very shortly in the past about, I'm a great dog mom, I think, but I'm a little bad about spoiling her. Well, no, I'm really bad about it. I spoil her a lot. And my fiance was picking her up. I was trying to eat something. She was right in my face. She's little. She's only 12 and a half pounds. And he lifted her up, and then he put her down, and Cheryl, she shot him a look. I mean, we still laugh about it. This look was like in her eyes, in her face. She whipped her head around and shot him a look. And I thought, I just love you so much because you're hilarious. And I said that to the dog. Because she just is so darn funny and so darn cute. But you're right. I talk about love a lot in my work and what I do, and it does mean different things. But yeah, I love the parrot story, and I never realized I knew they could talk, but I never knew that much. So yeah, there is love in everything. And so it's kind of natural. You probably find it in almost every book in one way or the other, now that you say that.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, if you look for something, you'll find it.
Mm-hmm. True. And you know, speaking of loving things, and we continue to talk about our bliss, I know that you also paint. And I looked at, you know, some of your paintings, the cover of the book. How does your painting connect with your writing?
Well, when I had the dream of Triton, I sat down and drew him and did a watercolor of him. And then I wanted to see what Callista looked like. And so I did watercolors of her. And then I wanted to see what they looked like as mermen and mermaids. And I did those. And in the paperback, they're in black and white. In the e-versions, they're in color, because it's too costly to make them color in the paperback.
Mm.
And it was so fun to do that. And it solidified in my mind who they were. So it gave me the ability to give them more personality at the beginning, when I didn't really understand who they were yet. I had to become acquainted with them. And it took me a while. I think I threw away 3/4 of the book when I first started, because it would go off in a direction and I knew it wasn't right, and I'd be like, I got to get rid of this, and I got to start again. I was like, just keep doing it. Keep going. You'll find it. And now that I've found it, book two I wrote alongside of book one. Book three has 100 pages in, and I can't wait to get going on. I have so many ideas that have been coming to me, and I write them down, you know, a little sentence or two. But it's going to go between 5 and 7 books, I think. And I'm going to keep writing until the characters are done with their story.
Well, sure. You got to let it come out.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
You've just got to. Now, do you paint on a regular basis? Is that part of something inside you that you also have to explore? Is that something you do?
Yeah, I've always been an artist. I'm a musician and an artist. I used to teach music, too. So the art is part of just being creative. I'm really poor at math, and I'm really good at writing and art and music. And I have to paint. So I love watercolors. They're very ethereal, very soft. I tried other things, other mediums, and I've enjoyed learning them, but I always keep going back to watercolors.
Really? Huh.
Yeah.
And you know, it is interesting because when you talk about creativity, I grew up musically. I never considered myself creative younger. What I realized is that's what I was trained to do, the other side of things more. And it wasn't not encouraged. It just wasn't something that came out as much. Again, I played an instrument since I was seven, and did till I was 17. I was in a higher level choir in high school you had to get into and things like that. But it's funny, writing now, I had to let some of that go and say, you know what? Take a deep breath. I know you're structured, Lori. Like when I'm structured making lists, I'm happy. It's like when I have a bunch of stuff going on in my head, I've got to write it down or I feel very cluttered inside. And once I do that, then I'm okay. I can sort of go again. So talking to you, being you are so creative, I think that is something that all human beings, I think, need to explore on some level. For some people, maybe between 1 and 10, they want to explore to a 3. Other people have to live it as their life. I mean, they have to make money at it. They have to live it. They have to be it. And all human beings are different. But I know creativity is a big thing in the world and with happiness too. So how do you feel like... When you're working with people you were a teacher, and even in just life, how do you feel about creativity? I mean, are you on the same page I am with it, or do you feel like, is it tough to get people to bring that side out in them? Or what are your thoughts on creativity in general? Anything you'd like to say about it, we'd love to hear.
Creativity is different for every person. The one thing all humanity has the same is we're all different. That is the one thing about us all. We are all different. We all function differently, think differently, feel differently, want different things. And a mathematician, when he's standing in front of that chalkboard and he's doing all his mathematical computation, that is creativity for him. My husband is an engineer. And when he's in his shop building his telescope stands and making telescopes and taking pictures of the heavens, and putting them on the computer and doing the color process, that's his creativity. Can I do that? No, I don't have the engineering level in my head to do that, but he can't paint a picture. Now, he can draw, but he can't paint a picture. Somebody else might want to put together a truck engine. They might go to the dump and pick out all these parts and make themselves a homemade automobile. One of my sons is very, very good at buying old Toyota trucks and putting them totally back together and reselling them. He loves to do anything mechanical. He's also a guitarist. He is also very good at art. But his thing is being a mechanic. Another person might want to go out and plant a whole bunch of trees and prune them and water them and watch them grow. That's their creativity. So creativity isn't just art, music, and writing. It's anything we do that brings out that part of where we make something. We create something, whether it's math or a truck, or we write a song, or we go and dance. That's another type of creativity. So I don't just say creativity is the artistic thing. I think it's anything that we make. You can make a mathematical formula that nobody else has made before, although I wouldn't know anything about it. The mathematicians would love it. So that's kind of the way I think about it, is creativity. It encompasses everything.
Yeah, I never really thought about it as that big of a picture. And, you know, for our listeners out there who can relate to this, I can't draw. I just can't. Not even a stick figure. And it's funny because I actually thought growing up that I wasn't creative, even though I was playing the organ since I was seven, taking lessons. And musically, into music and then singing and everything, I really didn't feel that I was creative. And it's funny, but what I've learned is I'm creative verbally. I'm typically pretty quick-witted. I use my sense of humor. I can say things. And I'm learning to see what that looks like as a writer. But sometimes you get caught in a how you were raised and what you're told is creative, and the box you live in is like small, you know, and then it begins to widen and you begin to see, oh, there's a lot of creativity in being verbal and being able to speak and talk and say things in different ways that people understand. So for our listeners who grew up, you know, I think the message here is loud and clear that creativity can be anything that you decide it is, I guess. Is that a good way of putting it?
Yes, it's anything that you do. It's anything that you do. If you want to go outside and rake up a Zen garden so you have this beautiful shape of the rake circles in the earth, that's a type of creativity. You got to think, even a surgeon, he's putting together a body that's been damaged. That's a type of creativity. And he will put it back together and try to make it function properly and look good when he's done. That's his bliss. So if you take it out of just a certain category, a musician or an artist or a writer, and you put it to anything that you do and you do it well, that's creativity.
So funny, because a long time ago, many, many years ago, I think we were getting some kind of seminar from a person that does makeup. And they said, do you understand that your face is a canvas? And that really hit me. Like, I just put this on, you know, every day, but there's so many things you could do with makeup and colors and the way that you put it on your eyes and everything. I said, that is very creative. Like, sometimes you don't think of those things, and we need other people to make us aware. And I often think when I'm doing my makeup, you know, I want to do something different. I want to do a different color lip, or I want to make my eyes look a little different just for fun. And I really enjoy, because again, I was always the type of person putting events together, which I know is very creative, but it felt like it wasn't, you know, the planning of it and just pushing paperwork. I wasn't allowing, and I think a lot of our people who do that kind of work have to maybe think bigger about it. When you're planning parties, that's extremely creative, or you're planning events, it's very creative. You got to take away from the paper part and say, what can I do to bring this other side out? And I'll tell you, I was shocked, you know, to see how much creativity there is really in like project management, et cetera. So I hope, if anything, our listeners have kind of, you know, opened that box and walked out that door, you know, push that box open and push the cardboard down out of the box, you know, and walked out of it, and maybe they can see a bigger picture of it. So that's very important.
Well, you know, when you're talking about management, it is a creative thing, because you're doing paperwork, but you're turning that paperwork into an actual event where people are together and they're doing certain things and they will have a memory. That is a wonderful way to be creative, because you're touching all these lives as you make this event. And it is either it's a wedding or a funeral or a baptism, whatever it is, a birthday party, an anniversary, that is creativity. And some people are very good at it. And if you are, that's your creativity.
Absolutely. And, you know, just to kind of wrap up about this part of the book, or the beginning, book one, what do you hope people take away from the book?
I hope they see that life can be filled with love and enlightenment in the midst of tragedies or problems or confusion or chaos, because we can learn in all these events that happen in our life, there's always something good we can take out of it. I don't care how painful it is, there's always something good that they can get out of it. And the story shows that, because consistently Calista learns new things, becomes more and more broadened in her thinking and her ability to understand the world. And she's impacting the gods and goddesses with who she is. She's going to make their world better, and they don't even know it yet.
Well, you know, that's a life lesson about finding something good in everything that might sound trite, but it really isn't. Even the worst of things, you can always find something in there. There's lessons to be learned. And, you know, I love bringing out to people and showing them, you know, this is one way. Your book can do that. Reading can do that. Anything in life can do that. You can learn the lesson of that. And I think that's, you know, what I do here. And I really love that. So I'd like to just have you kind of wrap up with, we know you've got other books coming, however many need to come. And you did mention those a little bit. Can you tell us just a little bit more about book two and three? I believe the second book's coming out when, January?
Yeah, 2017. It's called Ocean Depths of Time. They're all going to be ocean depths. And then darkness is one, a time is two, a life is three, and I think a dream is four, but I'm not sure yet because I'm not there in my head. But so that the series is always ocean depths. And ocean depths time, Callista is worried about Triton. She can't find him for a while. And she's trying very hard to get over some of her problems with her physical body changing. And she's learning new things. She's meeting some new gods and goddesses. And eventually, her and Triton get back together. They go back into time, and there's a reason for that. It's very interesting, and he doesn't know her when she goes back into his past. So then you have a new flip of where they have to get to know each other all over again. So I don't want to say too much.
No, you. I know you shouldn't. And I also, you mentioned maybe screenwriting could be in your future.
Well, I'm taking screenwriting classes right now because we've already done book one as a screenplay, but it just didn't capture the essence of the book, and so I hired that done. So now I'm going to work at trying to flip that or just have it, you know, totally redo it. Because I want my audience to feel the same way they do about the book that they do about the movie. And a movie's different. It's 90 minutes. It can only take, it can only do the highlights. So I can't wait to make this into a movie. It would be a beautiful movie. It would be in the kind of the vein of Avatar, that kind of a thing, because it would give it, you could have the real actors and actresses, plus you need to be able to be in the ocean.
Oh, wow. That just sounds beautiful.
So it's exciting. I've had a couple of important people, you know, saying, yes, this would be good to do it this way. And so we'll see what happens. We'll try it.
Well, very exciting. Well, tell us how we get your book and how we find you.
Yes. It's on Amazon.com, the book is. It's on BarnesandNoble.com. You can buy it at Kobo Books, KOBOBooks.com. It's at PlayGoogle.com. And I do have a website. If you look up C.L. Sherman, you'll find my website. And there is I do have a Facebook page. It's C.L. Sherman again. I don't spend a lot of time on Facebook because I'm writing books. You know, I zap in there a couple times a week and then I zap back out.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Well, wonderful. Well, you know, hope our audience go and pick up Cheryl Sherman's book, Ocean Depths, and watch for her upcoming books. And Cheryl, it's been a pleasure to have you on the Happiness Hangout. It was really, you know, wonderful time hearing about your book. And I guess we're going to wrap things up with just a little bit more about finding your bliss. And you mentioned that, you know, you see the characters finding their bliss. Really just a wrap-up question. What is your hope about people finding their bliss, or any last thoughts about that term or what you think or feel about it?
If a person works at finding their bliss, they will find that contentment that seems so elusive. It's we are our own best resource. If we take care of ourselves and we are kind to ourselves and we educate ourselves, and I don't mean this in a selfish vein. I'm saying if you have a wonderful resource, a natural resource, and you take care of it, it will flourish. And we are our own natural resource. I think people forget to see how valuable they are to themselves. We all have our own strengths, our own talents, our own abilities. And if we nurture ourselves, then we will be able to go out and help other people nurture themselves. And they will be able to go out and help other people nurture themselves. And the planet will become a better place. Because right now the planet is in kind of the dumps. And it's struggling. And the people on it are struggling. And life is not blissful. And I think people need to start looking, having a different view. And I think that's the point right there. If you view things differently, you can always find good in something. And if you find your bliss, no matter what age you're at, no matter what it is, no matter how much you have to work to make money, no matter how big your family is or how little it is, you can find ways to take care of yourself and find that inner person and what they need to do to make you the most happiest. Because when you're happy, they'll make other people happy. And then when they're happy, they'll make other people happy. It's just a common thing that people don't really, it is simple. It's very, very simple. But people are always thinking it's too hard to find that thing in themselves. But every little child knows what their bliss is when they're little. They do the things they want to do that make them the happiest. And as an adult, we walk away from that and we go to work. And we don't realize that even in our work, no matter what it is, we can find our bliss. And in our playtimes, we can find our bliss. And we can create a good life for ourselves internally, which makes a good life externally around us. So I highly recommend that people start thinking about what they love to do and make time for it. Because I don't watch TV very often. I'm usually writing or doing my music. My free time is spent doing the things that I love to do. And some people love to watch TV. Maybe that's their bliss. But for me, I like to be creative and I like to educate myself so that I can be better at what I'm trying to do and to make my talents more prolific. So I highly recommend people find their bliss. It's a good thing.
It sure is. Well, thank you so much, Arthur. Cheryl Sherman from Ocean Depths. Make sure you get the book. Thank you for sharing your thoughts with us and so much about the book. And Cheryl, thanks for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thank you, Lori.
Sure. And I'd also like to thank our sponsors, AirServe of Strongsville and AirServe of Mentor, your heating and cooling residential and commercial specialists. That's www.airserve.com. And also to the Magic Happens magazine. That's www.themagichappensnow.com. Speaking of finding your bliss, the Magic Happens magazine can help you do that. All right, folks, I think we'll be wrapping it up today. This is Lori from the Happiness Hangout. Thanks for joining us and see you next time.
Hi, this is your host, Lori. Want to get more happiness? Check out all the free readings, activities, and my blog at my website. Want to learn how to deal with life's challenges from your positive core? Check out Empowering Yourself to Happiness class, done totally online. You can find it all at www.happinesshangout.net. www.happinesshangout.net. Come explore and feel better wherever you are. This is Lori Peters with the Happiness Hangout. I provide presentations on happiness and well-being to businesses, schools, and anyone involved in wellness and professional days. Check out tons of free resources and activities also at my website, www.happinesshangout.net. Feel better wherever you are. Help us grow the Happiness Hangout Show. Become a sponsor. Businesses and nonprofits, get your info out there to thousands of my listeners all over the world for just pennies. Individuals can also sponsor one or more shows, and you get a shout out to your favorite charity. Several packages available. Come see what you get and put out there what's important to you. Go to www.happinesshangout.net. www.happinesshangout.net for more information.